to you live from the darkest corners of the toy aisle, deep within the abandoned toy store of yesteryear.
Oh,
we
no,
bring you tales of the toys.
I liked it. Let's go with it. Hey, everybody.
That was an old radio show that failed.
I wish it was the toy aisle of the mind, though.
The problem was that was a demo on an Edison cylinder.
Oh,
right. And the wireless radio had yet to be perfected. So Edison was oftentimes a few steps ahead of himself. And so he's really browbeating Marconi to get his ass in gear. He's like, I've done my part. I've got this great demo. This could be a show.
By the way, browbeating Marconi is the name of your autobiography.
That is. It was the second one. It's like, you know, Nimoy with I am Spock. I'm not Spock, and then I am Spock.
Right.
So my second autobiography, the later years, is browbeating Marconi.
As you just heard, this is Hey Kids Comics. This is episode issue 156. We're getting ready to start a big old arc that's going to take us all the way almost pretty much through Christmas. We are very excited. I am Andrew Farmer. With me as always, as now voice of a generation, producer, co-host.
Just not the present generation, apparently. I don't know.
And curator of all things toys, even more so than myself, the Jedi, Cole Houston. Thank you for that stirring intro.
That we've had in the vault for a while there. The problem with the old Edison cylinders.
70 years.
They don't play on anything other than Edison cylinder players.
I'm going to kickstart. How hipster would it be?
Ironically, now, you know, there's that new, laser... you can play, like, proper old records on.
Right.
They actually... I got the prototype for them.
Did you?
Because Edison cylinders are going to be coming back in a big way, I think. A lot
That's
of
the next.
Really hipster bands.
Exactly.
Very retro.
Very retro.
Yeah, and also the old, you know, the really super thick wax records, those players are coming back as well to go real retro. And also the little wooden dancing couple they put on the spindle.
Yes, yes.
As the record ran, they would dance to the music. That's coming back too.
All right. What are we doing here, Cole? What are we getting ourselves
in
into?
To talk about the history
of all recorded media.
From the Edison cylinder to the MP3, and that probably makes me sound like an old geezer. Not the Edison cylinder so much as the MP3, because we're like, yeah, Grandpa.
Did you just say MP3?
Who's using those?
This is the saddest Ken Burns documentary I've ever heard.
Well, we're talking about toys.
We are.
Something we talk about several times. Once a year, we've got to go out there and hit the toy aisle, because that's the kind of geeks we are. And they have a, you know, the toy genre, the toys have an important role in comicdom. I mean, there's always been a connection between the comic book and the toy almost as soon as there was a comic book.
Absolutely. And in merchandise in general, and I think that what you'll find is, as we get into this next, you know, massive arc that we're doing, is that we are going to tie comic books to other merchandise and back to toys, and then toys to other merchandise and then back to comic. It's all this weird marketing ecosystem that they've developed, and we'll get into it in the Marvel DC, but I think Avi Arad played a huge role in really overdeveloping that muscle.
Oh, yes. That period in Marvel history, replete with both the good and the bad, did bring the comic book toy, I think, to the fore in ways that no one ever imagined possible.
Right.
Prior.
Right. But,
and we'll certainly be covering that amongst the other next week when we talk about the Victrola.
The first half of the show is going to be on the Victrola,
yeah.
and then the last half of the show will be on comic book toys. I'm looking forward to week four, which is the 8-track.
Yes, that's we're really going to kick it old school then.
We are going to fast forward all the way through but not rewind.
That's right. So with that in mind, where do you begin? Where better to begin, in many ways, with the comic book toy or comic books, you know, being given the plastic or vinyl or other treatment than, of course, pretty much the first superhero?
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, can you do a quick breakdown of what all the issues in the arc are going to be? Just because I think it plays into what we're going to talk about. Because when we look at the lifespan, the arc of the superhero we're going to talk about, this superhero has toys in every single aspect that we're going to talk about, by far.
Absolutely. Yeah, this... We're going to start out with, of course, as you probably know if you're at the headline on this one or the title card for this episode, this is, of course, Toys Are Super.
Yes.
Where we're, of course, invoking a certain retail chain that has something to do with playthings. We're going to follow that. I believe next week is... Igo Migo.
Right.
Next week we're going to delve into one of the most important toy lines out there, because it was the first and only toy line to bridge the gap between the two major comic companies. Other toy lines, which we'll get into much later, did actually bridge gaps between publishers, but Migo did something unique and unheard of. I've always been amazed that no one tried to do this again. With the possible exception of the non-action figure type toys that still qualify, I think, technically as toys from Funko.
Right.
With their various pop vinyl. And that's to literally go after Marvel and DC simultaneously, among other properties.
Right.
And, you know, don't get me started on Funko, who apparently is going to pursue every property
ever made, just going after it all.
I mean, the Alice bobbleheads, the pop vinyl from, with Alice and Mel and the Kiss My Grits exclusive at Hot with Flo. That was a really bit of a reach, I thought, but apparently...
They really should have taken that to the... the ones we always talk about, the other action figures, the 3¾-inch
reaction.
Yeah, they should have really taken the Alice to the reaction line.
They should have.
I'm still waiting for my Mr. Belvedere line myself. They still haven't made on it.
2017, they're developing Angie.
Angie.
And Room 222.
Well, I'm just excited that the 2018 launch date for all various iterations of the Newhart show is finally getting made.
Yeah, everything from the Bob Newhart show straight through to Bob.
Exactly.
And beyond. So,
and a box set. Yeah. And a box set with a cardboard.
Well, the nice thing is, for Funko, they can use the same head for every single
one. That's from the time he was 2 till the time he was 82, Newhart's head has remained the same.
Precisely the same.
He has static Benjamin Button's disease. It's just...
That's right. The rest of him developed and grew. We're going to follow Igo Migo with JLA Avengers and Company, where we talk about Marvel and DC. Primarily.
Right.
That's their long and storied history with various manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
Then we move into Rise of the Indies. And that's an important one because, to me, I've always been like, good on you.
Right.
For any indie that didn't have to self-make. And we'll talk about that as well. There was a period in the 90s where, there were companies in China lining up to make your action figures for you. They weren't always the best, but there was a match was lit.
Right.
Todd McFarlane lit a match that lit a fuse that led to the good, the bad, the ugly in the indie comic.
Holy cow, did he ever.
Explosion of action figures and toys And we also tell the tragic story of Spawn lost at sea. I'm going to just put that out there.
It's going to happen.
It's kind of a teaser. Like if you're watching Talking Dead and they show you a tantalizing scene from next week. Then we'll wrap up with one of our favorite things to talk about on this show. When we talk toys, we cannot escape. It is WTF.
Right.
This weird toy forum where we talk about some of the strangest licensed and bootleg toys that we have ever encountered, heard of, seen, or have been passed down to us through the ages.
I will be invoking the Hulk. I am a purveyor of awful toys. I don't know if the audience knows that. If you know me personally, you know that. But if you just listen to the show, you don't. The story of Eddie and I looking for Ice Cream Soldier at the G.I. Joe convention, me finding at Retropalooza the Hulk, wrestling in a Red Shoe Diaries fashion, whatever alien creature that he was attacking, in the packaging, it looks like they're mid-coitus. It's right there. There's an akimbo factor that nobody needs to be aware of. Like, just put a curtain, put a handkerchief over the packaging. But yeah, this is going to be a good one. I'm looking forward greatly to that. To finding new things to buy, as well as talking about.
Yeah, because the future holds many great promises for us well. And with that in mind, we're going to talk about.
Can we talk about the man of the future?
Yes, indeed, or the man of tomorrow, if you will. Which, at the rate we're going, it will be the
tomorrow before we ever get to him.
But yes, indeed, the man of tomorrow, the man of steel, the man of. The last guy from Krypton, but none other than Superman himself. Superman,
which, by the way, we did lock in that there are how many Superman songs did we count? So you're making my job easy.
Yeah,
that's all I'm saying.
There were at least 7 or 8 that came up on the music episode, and yet another Superman related. theme had come to mind recently. Plus, there was a performance artist whose name escapes me. Who did the tape bow violin, and you know, the more I struggle to come up with it,
that's all right. But I'm just saying that you made my job super easy.
Yes, I did. I was just sort of like had this weird Superman rush there, where I kind of. Was hitting on all cylinders, all these different Superman and Superman-related songs, quite to my surprise.
By the way, I have to say this, in reference to last week's show, how amazing was that?
Oh, okay, yeah, well, we could do another hour just on...
I know, but...
On the experience.
but don't expect that in this show, because I'm bringing the dick jokes out. Bang, bang,
That's
bang.
Right.
Shots fired.
We're here to talk about the Man of Steel as the Man of Plastic, if you will.
Right, and like I was saying, if we're talking about all these, because the way that the arc is sort of lined up is we're going from this episode, we're going to start talking about Mego, we're going to go through kind of, not the history, but the various iterations of you know, the Marvel DC character lines and their from their different houses that they came from. We're going to talk about what came after that, which was really the indie boom, you know, and then we're going to talk about awful stuff. Superman falls into almost all of those categories.
Yes,
maybe
indeed.
Not the indie boom so much.
It touches the indie in that there are those Superman-inspired characters.
Right, your primes.
Superman rip-off characters.
Supreme,
as well,
yeah.
That got the plastic treatment as well.
So, yeah, but the beginnings of the Superman toys... When would you say? I mean, like we said, that it's pretty much from Jump Street. You had as soon as it became popular, you started to see Superman toy and memorabilia hit the marketplace hard.
Yeah, in fact, you know, as far back as the 30s, there were 10 toys.
Yes,
the precursor. I mean, like the Man of Steel was literally the Man of 10 in his day. Because tin was king. I mean, that was a remarkably cheap, highly, you know, readily available material before plastics, before synthetics, changed everything.
Right.
But, you know, Superman captured the imagination of the world, and instantaneously everybody wanted a piece of that action.
Right.
And so it's not surprising that you see Superman showing up in tin, in those awful early cellulite-type plastics.
Well, it's funny. I just wanted to do a search to see if I could find anything. There is a... If you go on eBay, if this gives you any indication of the age of... 1951 is the earliest one I can find. So, 1951, on eBay, a mechanical Superman turnover M25 tank wind-up toy. Okay? There's no Superman that I could see, but there is a tank that turns over. Superman's under the tank.
Oh, yes. I think I have seen the very toy you're talking about before.
Yeah, and it flips over because Superman flips it over, but Superman's under the tank.
Yeah, he's just sort of a litho.
Yeah. Almost $1,700 is what this thing is going for on eBay.
Yeah, the thing about it is you'd probably be hard-pressed to find, especially like on eBay. I mean, if I owned a toy from the 30s that, God forbid, had survived metal drives.
Right.
eBay wouldn't be the place you're going to go sell it.
Correct.
Go to Heritage Auctions or Christie's.
Right.
This would wind up in a very highly specialized kind of auction venue. But there are, you know, Superman toys that date back to the very beginnings of Superman. But certainly by the 50s, you're going to be seeing a lot of stuff because, you know, the Superman tank turnover theme.
as a milieu.
Big themes in 10 toys is either Superman turning over any number of different tanks, from things that looked like a tank to things that looked like something that might be like a space tank or something.
Right.
The other thing you would see often is like Superman versus the airplane.
Right.
I think that the concept was that Superman is racing the airplane, because the airplane itself is going to invoke this sense of a high-speed kind of vehicle. And here's Superman just keeping pace. And depending on the images you find and the angles at which they're photographed, sometimes Superman looks like he's really becoming biblically familiar
with that plane.
So be very careful when taking pictures of your prized Superman 10 toys, by, you know, checking your angles while you're checking the f-stop. It's also important to note that the early 10 toys, Superman bears the original S.
Yes.
The far less stylized S, for which he would become known later on. And in the variety of tank toy you were describing, what's wonderful is the Superman, what represents Superman is just effectively a flat piece of metal.
Yeah, yeah.
That is designed to kind of, as the tank is moving, to kind of catch it and force it to turn upside down.
Oh, here you go. So, I want to do this.
Real quick, I did discover Superman was not the only tank turner.
Oh, really?
Apparently, Popeye also...
Oh, Popeye turned some tanks, too, huh?
Turns tanks in his day. And from the looks of the one image I found, olive oil is apparently driving the enemy vehicle.
So during World War II, or prior to World War II, prior to, during, and after World War II, tank turning was a very important theme in comic-related toys. Good to know. So I have three rules that I have to ask myself when I'm talking about Superman toys, okay? Number one, is it faster than a speeding bullet? Number two, will it leap tall buildings in a single bound?
Oh, yes.
Yes. And number three, what was number three? Oh, God, now I forget. No, number three is, what's the motto of Superman?
he's certainly there to, can this toy protect true justice in the American
Way? Yeah, now, okay, so those are the three that I have to judge this with. So far, complete failures. We have yet to talk about a toy that is faster than a speeding bullet, or they could leap tall buildings in a single bound.
Actually, my dad collected a lot of Ten toys when we were growing up.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of antique Ten toys. Every Ten toy I've ever personally encountered isn't faster than a speeding BB.
Takes it right in the side.
It's not faster than a speeding rubber band released from your finger by your thumb, or a spit ball going from a straw. They're ponderously slow by comparison to almost any ballistic item you could imagine.
The velocity. But I found some wooden Superman dolls from 1940 when we talk about what has become known as the paradigm or the shift that's happening in technology, where what we're looking for is the Big Bang, right? And the Big Bang is when machines start creating themselves. That's what we're looking for. And if we look back, if we look at that diagram, if we plot the points out and we look back over the diagram, it's something like we are technologically exponentially growing at a rate of 30 to 40 years every year from a standstill. So at a rate of what should be every year, we're growing every 30 years. I think toys need to catch up. That's all I'm saying, is if we could do it with bioengineering and mechanics and quantum theory, give me my toys that can be faster than a speeding bullet. I want a supersonic toy, is what I'm saying right now.
Well, I think the biggest attractor right now is the fact that then that leads to Toys R Us carrying bumper stickers that say, you can take my toy from my cold, my Superman toy, for example, from my cold dead.
Oh, because they literally become weapons.
Yes, indeed. The ballistic toy then needs its own set of.
I like the direction this show's going.
The election fever is rampant in this country, and we try to remain as topical as possible in this show.
No, we don't.
Once in a blue moon. So
I appreciate you saying that, but that's a lie. We do not.
This was Saga, Lying Cat would be like, lying.
Just lying. He's just sitting over our shoulders lying.
So lying.
But let's move into the Mego. Because what we saw in that period was the first, I think during that period, we saw the first, what I would consider, full-on action figure toys. Right? Like,
I think so, because up to that point, especially what changed, the big dynamic that changes is you're going from the metal or even wood, which I will point out that the wooden Superman toy was the greatest defense against the Golden Age Green Lantern.
He just threw wooden Superman toys at him.
He was powerless against wooden Superman toys. They were as close an analog to Superman in that one instance. But otherwise, largely ineffectual with their kind of rubbery articulation and their
clickety clackety.
Yeah. Really noisy to deploy. But
really not a stealth weapon.
Yeah, and again, just a very limited resource.
You know. One single use, really. That's all you get. But once we
prior to that, you had with toys either a very solid or a limited articulation type of thing. Very often, toys would either be made of metal. If they were articulated, they were motorized in some way, like our tank flipper. Right. Another interesting thing was Ideal Toys at some point in their history had the Superman hand puppet, which was a vinyl puppet, effectively a kind of T-shaped thing, so you know your hand would go up in it, and your thumb and pinky would manipulate either side of that T, and it was almost like a big fat vinyl mitten that then would have a molded head on it.
Wow.
Like a popular character. In this case, they licensed Batman and Superman. So you had this sort of hollow vinyl, creepy-looking Superman sex doll head.
You do. I've seen the picture. It's horrifying.
And then you have this printed glove that is Superman's warped body.
Just like the sectars.
Yeah, he's very much like. I hadn't thought of that. But, yeah, it's more like a bipedal sectars. But, and then you have, you know, he's standing astride his own logo. Egomaniac.
Egomaniac. Can we talk for a second about... Okay, so I think that Megos were a good first attempt, right? They were a real good first attempt at making action figures. And I had Megos. I'm old enough to have had Megos.
I very much loved by the Aquaman from that line, of course, and I really seriously wanted the Lizard. But
yes.
I never could find him. I love the fact that there was a Conan. Hated the hair.
Well, my thing is, they were figuring it out. And God bless them for figuring it out. but they still were a little off. Because if you look at the sculpt of the head for Superman's Mego toy, right? I mean, it's accurate. Except for the fact that I can't figure out whether it's the bastard love child of Ernest Borgnine and William Shatner, or Johnny Cash and William Shatner. I'm somewhere between those two pairings. If you look at the head of the Mego Superman doll,
well, I think that it was almost like, with the exception of maybe the Thing and the Lizard and certain other non-humans, there's only the slightest difference if you actually look at the classic figures. It's like, you know, some artists are very distinctive. Like, you can always tell Gil Kane because of the noses.
Right.
And the chins and everything. But with very few exceptions, any of the human-like heads, there was very little drift. It was like there was one guy on the sculpting line. There was this wheel of wads of clay that were going to be a head sculpt. And there's precious little drift from Superman to Conan to... at least the uncowled part of Batman, or the Bruce Wayne head.
Right.
But, depending on which era you're looking at as well, some of these Superman heads get a little, you know, some of them you're thinking they could just pop that off there, put him in a Old West suit with a cowboy hat and make it into the Rifleman. And it would be passable.
Right.
Chuck Connors. Others, the sculpt is... You're not really sure what you're looking at. But it's not quite Superman.
It's... Right. But you know what else Mego did was... They released... They gave their first shot. They gave us the real first round. And they're really the progenitors of what we call action figures now.
Yeah.
You go into, you know, your Target, your Toys R Us, your whatever, and you go look at action figures, those would not have existed without Mego, because Mego started with the cloth and rubber, essentially, action figure, the big 8-inch guys. But
yeah, the concept was essentially that you have a kind of, you know, a simple articulated body of plastic, which you then pop a rubber head onto, sheathe it in cloth clothing, and cram impossibly these plastic boots, which must have been put on in a state of, like, torturously hot, fresh out of the oven. Because if you ever, God forbid, got the boots off of one of these guys,
you're never getting it back.
Never
on.
Going to get
no.
it back on.
Take this word of advice: if you end up with a Mego, if you go out and find a Mego, don't don't take the boots off. Leave the boots on. Pretend it's Burt Reynolds in bed. Leave the boots on.
Burt Reynolds in bed, indeed.
But what they did after that was they gave us our first run of what they called Pocket Heroes, what we know today as the somewhere between 3 and 4 inch action figure in plastic. And they gave it to us mass market, and they gave us our big run of characters, and they gave us the first cross, because Mego had a hand in both pies. They had their hand in the Marvel pie and the DC pie. So they gave us the two worlds.
Oh, yeah, between
together.
Their cloth and plastic lines and their pocket superhero lines, they have the unprecedented ability to bring literally everybody to bear.
Right.
And damn near did it in some cases. Some of the choices were uniquely obscure. And then the other thing was the original Mego, or Mego, however you want to pronounce it, the original line had a really brilliant concept that got carried over for years to come, whenever possible, by other toy companies. And that was it was almost like, you know, they were taking a page from Barbie, because one thing Mattel did well with Barbie is they could churn out 50 billion of exactly the same body.
Right.
And dress it 100 different ways and sell, essentially. So you only had to tool up once.
Mm-hmm.
Until you got to curious body plans.
Until you got to The Thing or The Hulk or...
Well, oddly enough, The Thing uses the same body as everyone else, even though The Hulk had a unique body.
You could have just...
For some reason, they didn't think to use The Thing's body and dress it in a suit, because it was cheaper to put a suit over a regular standard male body.
Right.
To represent all those rocks than it would be to put it over a Hulk body. Represent all those rocks. However, when they were compelled to make the Penguin, they decided, by God, we've invested in the fat body. We're making Mr. Missile.
Oh, I forgot about Almighty Osiris.
Oh, Isis.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Isis. Almighty Isis. If you've ever seen Free Enterprise,
can't really say that for fear of people getting it confused with a different Isis of a different age.
Right, Almighty Isis. If you've ever seen Free Enterprise,
it is a crucial
plot
point. Part
of the
story is the Mego Isis figure.
Mm-hmm. Which is great.
You invoked, though, the pocket heroes. What I love about the pocket superhero is how they got it. There was a different era, and you couldn't get away with this today. Every single pocket hero came on exactly the same nondescript crap. This is the thing you'd expect on a Mexican bootleg.
Right.
It's a red field bordered in yellow with the words Pocket Superheroes across the top in a kind of love boat theme or font.
Right.
Or the font you would use if you're doing a college production of Hair. You know, I think the Aquarius is the actual font name.
If the moon is in the seventh sun, is that right. Jupiter aligns with Mars?
You have this sort of funky, you know, wow, 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 wow.
But that's the time period, man. That's what makes you so fucking groovy,
and
man.
Then it simply says, only 3 3/4 inches tall, fully posable, small enough to fit in your pocket, big enough to...
So good.
Giant-sized adventure. And that's in just a very plain kind of Times New Roman font. And the rest of the packaging is just this massive field of red and parked dead center in the midst of all this. And the most... I mean, there are marketing students who look at this and vomit, you know, because they can't imagine that this was a way to sell things. It's nothing. It's just red.
It's just...
It could be Superman. It could be Hulk. It could be anybody. It didn't matter. because they saved a bundle by not bothering with graphics.
Right. They just went for it. God bless them. They just did it. And my favorite is they did have a variant cover, a variant packaging that looked like denim jeans. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes, because the idea was that you could put them in your tough skins.
You could put them in your tough skins, man. I love the 70s so much.
Oh, and an interesting thing about the 70s is a lot of toys came out of the 70s, not the least of which was the conceptually the 3¾-inch, the small scale figure that the Mego figure at about 8 inches was hitting a better price point than the G.I. Joe
right
at 12 inches.
Right.
And still giving you doll clothes and, in some cases, embarrassing doll hair in the case of Thor or Conan. But another thing the 70s brought us was Stretch Armstrong.
Oh, snap. Yes.
And naturally, in a very Austin Powers way, everybody wants to be him. And so, you know, Mego comes along and says, oh, well, you know, we're going to have elastic heroes.
Oh, nice.
And for some reason, they favored... I mean, this would have been this would have been the time to make a Mr. Fantastic action figure toy.
Right.
The elastic heroes on the Marvel side of the license, Spider-Man, Hulk. And on the DC side, Batman and Superman. Playing the most autoerotic game of Twister you've ever seen. And what's fascinating is I just stumbled on a long time ago for odd eBay on feature on the JCU I've not messed with in far too long. I found someone selling an original ad for Elastic Heroes, the DC ones.
Okay.
I just stumbled on the ad for the aforementioned Spider-Man and Hulk on the Marvel side. Both ads use exactly the same base body art.
Yeah.
Where one character has their arms twisted all around their chest and one arm going up and kind of grabbing the E in elastic. And the other character in the frighteningly bizarre sort of human centipede
yogi and
touching what is this left foot C touching the C with their foot, and they basically just recolored the two and parked a different head. So even in print advertising, even the graphics department saved money by using the same body.
That's fantastic. That's awesome.
It is insane.
Well, we move out of Mego and we go into what then becomes the boom, the toy boom that we experienced through the 80s and the 90s. And we see things like the DC Superpowers line. The Justice League.
This was a period where engineers at Kenner began to find themselves at the height of their powers, I think.
Well, they were kind of... I think they were... When they started realizing that there was money to be made, I think what happened was that they just started writing blank checks. You know? Like, just go do it.
So very true, because one of the things that happens in this period is the superpowers introduced amazingly intricate internal mechanisms. It was like some disgraced Rolex engineer found himself on Kenner's doorstep and said, you want small moving parts that are internalized? I got you covered. And you know, these things were like meticulously engineered to a ridiculous level.
Right.
Where, you know, by squeezing here, it was like this sort of, you know, computer basic algorithm made physical, you know, if arms squeezed, legs kick.
They're just madmen at a chalkboard. Just and the superpower toy line was insanely robust. Like, we have talked about it in the past, but you've got characters... First of all, you've got characters that didn't exist outside of the superpower toy line. Let's address that first. You've got, like, the Golden Pharaoh, and...
they literally introduced characters into the DCU, by and large, never made it into the DCU.
But they did the things like... they did the leg squeeze... arm punch, or the reverse, like the Flash had the arm squeeze leg run.
It was literally like you squeeze legs to punch arms, or you squeeze arms to kick legs.
But the one
because Aquaman had the squeeze the arms to do his little like swim kick.
That's true. But the one that always got me. My favorite one was Darkseid, who had the inside of his head was hollowed out, and then that weird red prism was put in there.
Yes,
so you could get the Omega beams.
The time is a light pipe.
A light pipe.
A light pipe. The phrase was coined back then, and it would later be used for the earliest Jawas when the Star Wars line was revived in the 90s. Light pipe technology was where you would, you know, literally have a translucent plastic insert that effectively has a window in the top of the head and lines up behind hollow eyes inside the hollow head, and light coming in through the top, through the window, then illuminates the eyes. Darkseid glaring at you, or
light pipe is the most adorable thing I've ever heard in my life.
Light pipe was actually the fifth album, also from Ultra Cafe.
Yeah, it was unreleased, right? Light pipe.
Yeah, light pipe. It was. They're still working on it. There were some issues with
funding. It was funding again, wasn't it?
Well, they're on their third Kickstarter.
Light pipe.
Apparently, you get a time limit or something. I'm not sure how that works.
But
it's one with which is the Scandinavian Kickstarter.
Oh, is it now?
Yeah, Uskavin, which sounds strangely different than what I said the first time, but it actually
it's the same thing though. It's the same thing though. Let's
That's right.
Shut up. It's the same thing. But my favorite of all the Superman toys that came out of this time period is also my favorite superhero line that ever came out. And it was in 96. And it was and we've talked about this before. As a matter of fact, Cole has been so kind as to supply me with one of these figures in the form of Parallax. And that is the Kenner DC Total Justice action figure line. Because...
Also known as TJ.
TJ Extreme. Because what they did with the Total Justice action figure line was take these super powerful gods among men and then give them more shit. Like, because it wasn't good enough, your Green Lantern ring isn't enough. Your ability to run within the Speed Force actually through time and through the multiverse, not enough. Your ability to command... 3/4 of the mass of the Earth being water and speak
have a harpoon hand at the time.
Yeah, and at the time have some sweet sweet
Captain Hook harpoon action going.
Yeah, sweet Clairol hair isn't enough. You need a crazy bunch of attachable plastic shit to go with it.
Yeah, you need to have like this exoskeletal armor that you have to Elysium it up.
Screwed right into your nervous system.
Yeah, it's like Matt Damon in Elysium.
Yeah, because if you look at the Superman figure for this, first of all, it invokes the post-death of Superman with the sweet flowing locks, the lion's mane of ebon, the ebon curtain that is Superman's hair. backed closely by a kryptonite ray blaster. Why Superman would have a kryptonite ray blaster is beyond me, but okay. Some chest armor, because the fact that he can withstand literally anything is not good enough. Two kryptonite shields and a cape. He does come with his cape. Let's not forget the cape.
And the very exaggerated, the sculpting on all of them, everyone.
Oh, it's nuts.
Top to bottom, it's from the villains nuts. Like Despero to Hawkman, even a light pipe free Darkseid, were to a man angry as all hell.
Yeah, they were upset. These toys were upset.
People get all up in arms because there are no happy Lego men anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody seems to care about total justice. And another thing it's important to note about this period is this is the era that gave us the box set.
Yes.
Which
yes.
may have been a... I think this one may have even been like a comic shop exclusive.
I think so.
But it was the box set of Superboy, Reign of the Supermen era.
Yes.
Also angry as hell.
Super angry.
And a surprisingly happy-looking King Shark.
Right.
King Shark actually looks downright jovial. You know, amidst all these just bitter, belligerent heroes. These sort of Vic Morrow and Twilight Zone anger levels that are just... falling off the faces of these little characters.
So, can I give you a spoiler real fast?
Go right ahead.
Is it okay if I spoil something for you? I'm going to spoil it for the audience too, and I don't care. If you don't watch Flash, and you plan on watching Flash, and you haven't watched this season yet, step away for the next 3 minutes, and then come back. But I'm telling Cole anyway, because this is more enticement for him to get off his ass and watch this show.
That's right.
The last episode of Flash, fully realized, 8-foot-tall, beautifully CG'd King Shark.
Oh my god. Okay.
Fan-fucking-tastic. Like, they alluded to it all episode like they weren't going to show it, you know? And then the very last scene, there's King Shark. And all of his, like, ripped pants glory looking amazing. So, I'm spoiling it for you, Cole. I'm sorry if anybody else heard it that didn't want to hear it. I'm trying to get him to watch this show, because now we've had Grodd and King Shark. If you aren't watching this show, do yourself a favor. But regardless, okay, so yes, the Superman from that series, the King Shark, yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah, Superboy versus King Shark is a thing of beauty in its own right. And you also get, during the Total Justice period, not only your Mighty Mullet Superman, but you would later get Superman Blue and Superman Red.
That's true. That's true.
Rendered in this way as well. So, this is the period that gave us, and at that time, you see a lot of casting about for what's, you know, let's just throw everything out there.
Right.
They were literally chumming the toy waters because you had like about a 7 or 8 inch line.
Mm-hmm.
That effectively was like the Total Justice characters made bigger.
Right.
There were a lot of two packs. There's like an Azrael Batman mm-hmm. versus a... I'm not sure what's going on there, armored up Superman.
There's a lot of I'm not sure what's going on armored up characters in the Total Justice line.
The Cyberlink.
Oh god, Cyberlink was
limited
the worst.
Edition
was the worst. It's just
and,
awful.
You know, putting out figures with trading cards, putting out figures with comic books, putting out figures with ridiculous accessories and anything to get you your Superman fix, and very often this is the sort of thing you'd more often find at KB or something like that. And I believe that another really unique Superman toy from more recent years, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, there was a Toys R Us exclusive of the Marlon Brando Jor-El.
Really? Did it phone itself in as well, or did it? Did it just?
It's,
I'm sorry. That was speaking ill of Marlon Brando. That was unfortunate of me. I'm sorry about that. I redact that. Don't write me angry letters about how much you love Brando. I'm not talking about Apocalypse Now Brando here. I'm talking about a different Brando.
You're talking about, like, say, Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, God. I can't do it. I can't. We're running low on time anyway. I can't tell my Island of Dr. Moreau Brando story.
It's a Jor-El hologram.
Oh, nice.
Kenner figure.
Nice. I promise this to tell, once we get into the weird figures in issue 5, I'll tell the Marlon Brando Jor-El story. Remind me. Or the Marlon Brando Island of Dr. Moreau story. But yes, I would like to touch very briefly. I want to hear your favorite, because we've done some research on this. Just one to wet our whistles on what's coming in the fifth iteration of this story arc. Just one of the things that the weird Superman toys that you find, or memorabilia or collectibles that you found, to talk about. Just to wet everybody's whistle about what's coming, because it's coming down hard is what's happening.
Yeah, you know, one of the more popular things you'll often see is like a, and we'll probably talk about this on the on that show, is you sometimes wind up with these. There's a famously a very awkward Batman squirt gun.
Yes.
But there's also, there was a Batman and a Superman, apparently, but there was a squirt gun where the little plug for the water, the water reservoir, the hole to fill his body. It's like Superman, if his body was reduced to, like, a chess piece or a salt shaker.
Yes.
And he had a really bad tracheotomy where the trigger is located.
Yeah, right. It's like stretched out in a weird gun shape, like.
Yeah, it's like the trigger is just like, you know, the finger curve is there, right? Just right below his chin, and the stem goes into a hole in his throat, and there's just this tiny little pinprick between his lips for him to
shoot
to
water out of his mouth.
Spit water out.
Oh,
and yeah, it's apparently was the action hero water gun.
Of course it was. Of course it was.
From back in the day. And it's, you know, it's what a few years back might have been described in Japan as a super deformed.
Right, right.
Which, you know, when I first encountered that term, I'm like, what the? Okay, now I get it.
Now I understand.
Because it's, you know, this enormous head, this tiny misshapen body. And it's just one of the most frightening looking things, because it does look like you're kind of manipulating the Batman one we'll talk about later, because there are
so
more
many
ways that that's wrong.
So many ways.
And you can really ever adequately explore, even in a full hour, just on that.
Right.
But as figural squirt guns go, this is probably the second worst. After the Batman one.
That's right. So, with all that being said, since we're basically out of time, I hope that what has happened here is we've enticed you to join us for the next four issues of this. Next issue is going to be super fun. I love talking. I didn't want to get too hip deep into the Mego stuff, but I really love talking about the Mego stuff in the 70s.
Oh, there's just so much to talk about there, too, because of just the vast history and how many places. I mean, most of us, I think, when we talk about that line, we tend to think about the cloth costume
right
characters. But the reality is that there were so many different directions they took that line, and we'll talk a little bit about that because there was a very awkward Supergirl.
Okay.
That was made by them that I'll have to explain sometime.
Nice. All right, well.
But we should definitely move on and just let people know. And I think that you yourself brought to my attention another unusual Superman toy. And that was the, back in the day, I believe, was it Mattel who made the Thing Maker?
I think it was Mattel. I'm not.
It might have been Ideal.
It was Ideal.
That's right. Yeah. Ideal. The Thing Maker, there was a period in this country's history where, you know, we didn't worry too much about how, you know, preserving the health and well-being of children.
Right.
Because the toys were off. And you know, this is the days when, like, a, you know, cast iron room fan might have a little metal guard around the blades.
Right.
That you could, you know, put your entire fist through. So, you know, we weren't too worried about a lot of things back then. And the Thing Maker was essentially a concoction where you use this heat vulcanizing rubber to go into metal molding plates that were then put on a plug-in, effectively a high temperature, almost like a high temperature hot plate for kids.
Right.
So in the annals of bad ideas, you know, litigation may be one of the reasons Ideal Toys is no longer around.
It did end up in Mattel's hands, though, at some point.
Oh, okay. But, you know, the thing about it is, it just, I think these are the types of toys that created tort law. And, but the Thing Maker was a, actually kind of a vacuum, apparently like a vacuum form.
Sort of, yeah.
But you had these metal plates that you could cook up rubber things with, and you would just sort of cook them in and peel them out, and then you could, but apparently they made a Superman, somebody made a Superman accessory kit where you could make a little flat-backed molded Superman figurine in rubber.
Yes, you could.
With a separate cape piece. And apparently the other piece was a little rubber Superman symbol.
Like a shield, yeah.
Yeah, the shield that you could put as a, you could wear as a ring.
And I'm sure that the paint that came with it to paint it was not at all lead-based.
No, not remotely. And, of course, the ring you would use to cover the burn spot.
On your finger, you would use it to cool you after after you've burnt yourself to it, to a charred Freddy Kruegerian husk.
You know, personally, I miss the era of the high-temperature toy, because I had high-temperature toys.
I think we all did. High-risk, high-reward is what those toys were. Like, exactly. You were all in on your toys. That's the way
so
that
So I'm going to show a picture of the metal plate that one would use, or the actual the Thing Maker Superman set, so you can see the lead paint and
the danger.
The dangerous metal plate you would heat your guy up in. And just on a personal side note, Andy is aware of this at an antique shop or a unique resale shop in Austin. I found a Thing Maker plate.
Yes, you did.
That caught my interest because they had two. One was obviously an ant, and the other was a curious arthropod of some kind that further research revealed my suspicion that I could not dare to voice that this would be possible. But this particular creepy crawly creature that they had decided to market was none other than an exaggerated crab louse.
Exaggerated crab louse. That's the sixth album by Ultra Cafe.
As soon as they get this latest Kickstarter going. But yeah, the fact that someone in looking for some sort of creature of all of the various species of lice that plague the days of man,
it was a crab.
They chose the crab louse, or the pubic louse,
if you will.
It's fantastic. See what the stuff does to kids. All right, with that, I guess we should wrap
that's a
up.
Good place to end this, right? Yeah. There. The words pubic louse is pubic could louse. Not have asked for a better way to end. Well. Guys, we're gonna plug it up here, and we're going to get out of here, but next week we're going to talk about Megos. So, Cole, why don't you tell everybody all the stuff that we need to know?
Absolutely. So if you're keen on toys and keen on just fun, wild, crazy, cool stuff, and you enjoy this show, you like the Star Wars, you'll want to see some other stuff that we're up to around, check out right here where you found us, hopefully, or if you found us elsewhere, look for the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com, where you can follow this and other shows periodically, and some more features coming soon. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can, one of my little side projects, of course, is tracking and making everyone aware of where to find, where and when to find great conventions of fan interest all over the Lone Star State at Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info.
There you go. That's a lot of stuff. I love it. And with that, we will take our leave. I apologize. I'm a little under the weather, and I'm pretty exhausted, so I got spacey there for a while. But I promise I'll be better next week. Thank you guys for listening and enjoying the show with us, because without you guys, there would be no show. So, Cole, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, in very much in keeping with the old, our traditional slogan for this show, go out there and collect and enjoy and find toys, both unique and fun, as well as just the weird and bizarre.
That, you know, we do for certain. That's our mantra.
That's right.
And join us next week when we discuss, is it possibly Hans Gruber's head that's on Superman's body? I don't know. It could be
I think we need to do one of those Google photos.
I'm not going to